Well, good morning.
Good morning.
It's good to see all of you here. One second, I just have to sort through my notes here for a second, and then... All right. So you all know that we've been doing this sermon series on Satan, demons, and angels, demons, and you. And so... I am now in this phase where we're going to be talking about, my next sermon will be where we will enter full on into Ephesians 6 verses 10 through 20, which is probably the quintessential, it's probably the essence of a lot of what we're talking about. I mean, I think that's probably like the go-to passage for many people when they talk about things related to Satan, demons, or demons, angels, and you. So I'm just going to read this portion here, and we're going to pick it up, and then I'll give some more in the way of some introductory comments. The title of this whole series is Fighting Dark Satanic Forces with the Full Armor of God, a deep dive into Ephesians 6. And so it begins by saying, finally, be strong in the Lord and in the strength of his might. Put on the whole armor of God, that you may be able to stand against the schemes of the devil. So you need the full armor to stand against the schemes of the devil. Then he goes on to say, this is the Apostle Paul, for our struggle is not against flesh and blood, but against the rulers, against the authorities, against the powers of this dark world, and against the spiritual forces of evil in the heavenly realms. So any manifestation of evil that we experience in this world, although it may appear as if it's a person doing it, what's really behind all of that are these dark forces in the heavenly realms. Now, when you read this particular text, for our struggle is not against flesh and blood, but against the rulers, authorities, and spiritual forces of evil, it's kind of ethereal. It's a little difficult to picture what those forces might look like. Certainly there's some cultural pictures that people have provided over time. And I remember, this, maybe some of you are old enough to remember this too, but there was this movie I saw a long time ago. It was about Santa Claus coming and delivering gifts, and it was about the devil trying to thwart him. Do you remember this? And they basically showed him in, like, the devil in, like, red pajamas, and he had the weird, you know, kind of, like, arrow-headed tail and the horns and all that kind of stuff. And so they got that picture. And by the way, largely, a lot of the cultural icons of how Satan looks came largely from Nazism in the 1930s. It was popularized in that way. And the Nazis did that because they tried to conflate Jews with Satan. And so they would give that kind of horrific image, and they would associate that with Jews. So that's where a lot of that's come from. But anyway, how can we visualize what these powers of the dark world and spiritual forces look like? How can we visualize that? And so what I alluded to and began a little bit on last week was a passage from 1 Peter 5:8. And so I think that this is a helpful passage to give us a more graphic picture of what those dark forces might in fact look like in our world today. So this comes from 1 Peter 5:8. And Peter records, he says, be sober-minded, be watchful. Your adversary, the devil, prowls around like a roaring lion seeking someone to devour. And it's important. This is just really important to note. Now, again, as a child, sometimes when you pick up your Sunday school curriculum and they have this passage here, in a kind of a cartoonish fashion, they show, this devil prowling around. It looks like chalk art or, you know, crayons or something like that. And it does not convey what the Apostle Peter here was trying to convey using this metaphor and this image of Satan. And I want to be clear. God exists. Satan exists. God is a very real entity and a very powerful entity. Satan is a real entity, not even close to being as powerful as God, but he is very real. And just because we don't see him in the way that we think we should see him doesn't mean that he doesn't exist, right? You don't see germs, but they exist. You don't see the wind, but it exists. And those are physical entities. We're talking about something that's metaphysical, that has a presence in the physical world. Now, when I say that the lion metaphor used by Peter is every bit as terrifying as other important scripture, this is what I mean. So here are some of the iconic passages of scripture that when you look at them, you think, man, I do not want to be that person. I don't want to be in that situation. So some of you remember the parable of the talents with the worthless servant. And because the worthless servant was not faithful and did not perform well with his responsibilities, at the end of that text it says, and cast the worthless servant into the outer darkness. In that place there will be weeping and gnashing of teeth. If you can go on to the next slide, there you go. And cast the worthless servant into the outer darkness, and in that place there will be weeping and gnashing of teeth. Nobody wants to be there. When you think about that as a possibility for yourself, this is a terrifying prospect. No one wants to be there. And so this is what happened to the worthless servant. Here's another. This is also well known. Jesus, the rich man, Abraham, and Lazarus. Do you remember that story? That's presented kind of almost as a parable. So the rich man, whose servant was Lazarus, continued to live, but Lazarus, the rich man died, and Lazarus continued to live. And here, as Jesus recounts it, the rich man was in Hades. He was in hell. And here he was in torment. And he says to Abraham that he wants Abraham to send Lazarus, his servant, to dip his finger in water to cool his tongue, for he says, I am in agony in this fire. So the metaphor of the lion is every bit as ominous as this text and the text preceding it, every bit. And then this one, this is the final one, this is another one. For those people refusing to move from our life, those things that interfere with our ability to be faithful. So in other words, he's talking about if your hand causes you to sin, cut it off. If your eye causes you to sin, it's a hyperbolic statement. In other words, remove anything in your life, no matter how precious it is, if it's interfering with your ability to be faithful with God, remove it. Because, he says, better to have those things removed than to be thrown into hell, where the worms that eat them do not die and the fire is not quenched. Another really graphic, very powerful text. This text is no less powerful than the text that Peter recounts in 1 Peter 5:8. It's that significant. It's that powerful. So I want us to approach 1 Peter 5:8 with that in mind. All right, so here we have it in 1 Peter 5:8. Be sober, be vigilant, because your adversary, the devil, is as a roaring lion walking about seeking whom he may devour. All right, so as we read this then, as we look at it, and I read this from a different Bible, a different translation, but I think it's called the English Easy Bible, but it's more of a paraphrase, but I think it helps to fill in some of the nuances. And so as he says, think seriously about how you live, watch carefully for danger, remember that the devil is your enemy. He wants to hurt you. He walks about like a hungry lion. He's looking for someone to kill and then to eat them. But you must be strong to fight against him. Trust God completely. Remember this. Believers all over the world are having the same kind of trouble. This is real. And the truth of the matter is, most of us live in this world as if it's only semi-real. Most of us have this kind of spiritual detente with the enemy. You don't bother me, I won't bother you. You don't pay attention to me, I won't pay attention to you. But there is no economy. There is no reality in which the enemy is not paying attention to you. You are, and this is the biblical text, you are, I am, we are his prey. And it is only God's common grace that keeps us from becoming his prey in the here and now. You are where you are in life right now because God protects you in this world. But it, and the scriptures are clear, if we do not trust in Christ, if we do not surrender and submit our life to him, then that protection is gone in the next world. And we do become his prey. And the worm that does not die, that eats us, is with us for all of eternity. That's the biblical text. Now, understand this too. One of the reasons why we are his prey is that the devil hates humanity with a special kind of hatred. Because despite our fallen state, our rebellion against God, our depravity, brokenness, and sin, Jesus Christ died on the cross for us to redeem us, to reconcile us, to restore us into right relationship with him. And Satan can never be restored. His rebellion cost him that restoration for all of eternity. Our rebellion was more than compensated because of what Christ did for us on the cross. But understand that Satan is our enemy, and he has a special kind of hatred for us, for you. And if we choose to ignore that, we do that to our dire detriment. Now, in this book, as I mentioned last week, in this particular text, there are 9 words. So in any respectable kind of sermon or message or teaching, you need to do a thing called word studies, because when you read it in the Greek or when you read it in the Hebrew, there are certain things that don't always cross over into the English. And so it's very helpful to get to the original words to understand what the original, because it helps to expand our understanding. And so that's where I'm going to spend most of my time this morning. Those 9 words are sober-minded, watchful, adversary, prowse, roaring, lion, devil, seeking, and devour. I'll have to say that in all the years that I've been doing messages, there are a few biblical texts where there are that many words in that small of a verse. It's so full and it's so rich with imagery. It really requires this kind of an expansive biblical word study to get a bigger and more fuller meaning of what's going on. So we come to the first one, be sober-minded, which is nepsaiti. So nepsaiti is the Greek word for sober-minded. And this is what it means. The Greek word for sober in 1 Peter 5:8, nepsaiti, is a form of the verb nepho. This word literally means to abstain from wine. But it is figuratively used to mean being of a calm and collected spirit, discreet and self-controlled, rather than being mentally or spiritually intoxicated. So it's a person who has firm control over how they think and their attitudes and their mindset and their heart. Be sober-minded. So as we go through life, be sober-minded. So let me ask you this question. How would you describe your daily spirit or heart or attitude? Is your daily heart or mind or attitude, is it sober-minded? Are you in control? Are you aware? Are you disciplined with how you think? How would others describe your daily mind or heart or attitude? If you do a little survey of people who know you well, say, hey, as you encounter me on a regular basis, how would you describe me on average in terms of my heart? What's it like? Some of us simply don't want to have that conversation because we would be disappointed, right? I mean, I'm sure there are days I would be disappointed. So I know that to be true. How much of our spirit conveys fear, anxiety, impatience, anger, bitterness, resentfulness? How much of that leaks through on a fairly regular basis? Joylessness? Or is what leaks through on a regular basis loving and kind and patient and gracious and joyful? That's all a part of nepsedi, being sober-minded, being in firm control of how we think and what our attitude is, what our spirit is. Everyone here knows a person probably that when you're around them, they're just calm. There's just something about them that they exude strength, discipline. They're sort of unflappable. And you kind of like being in their presence. You borrow the peace that's a part of their heart. You're inspired by the discipline that they bring to their life. Nepsedi. Be sober-minded. And if we're that kind of a person, we are much less of a target for the enemy. We're not, he can't sort of pick at our anxiety or our bitterness. So this is a little bit of a rabbit trail, but I think it's related. And I think as I was thinking about this, this came to mind. Because of your sober spirit that is calm, thoughtful, and self-controlled, name just one thing of real significance that you exhibit daily on behalf of others, other than your family, that if you don't do that thing of significance, lives are compromised and they might even suffer as a result. What? Name one thing of significance that you do on a daily basis that if you didn't do it, other people in your life would suffer. And that's just one thing. We probably should have more than one thing. But most people probably can't say one thing because they're not sober-minded. And if we cannot name at least one thing of intentional and positive significance, then we are vulnerable to attacks from Satan as a lion because we lack purpose and direction and because we make others vulnerable to him as well. If we cannot name one thing, we should be very concerned for ourselves when we stand before the judgment seat of God. Being so reminded, nepsedi, is that important. Peter leads with that. Here are other biblical translations for sober-minded. So when you read other biblical translations, these are the words that they use for nepsedi. Well-balanced, clear-headed, be on your guard, control yourselves, be serious, think seriously about how you live, have sound judgment, keep your mind clear, be self-controlled, be temperate, keep a cool head, keep awake, discipline yourselves. That's how other exegetes interpret the word nepsedi. It's a full word. It's a big word. It's an instructive word. So the second word in this word study that's important for this text, Be sober-minded, be watchful. Gregoro, be watchful. So be sober-minded, and as you are sober-minded, be watchful. The Greek word translated as vigilant or watchful in 1 Peter 4:8 is gregoro. This term denotes a state of continual readiness, alertness, wakefulness, similar to the idea of being on guard against an enemy. Now, just do some quick inventory. How watchful have we been over the last day, over the last week, of the devices and the schemes of the enemy in our life? Watchful, vigilant. You see what's going on. And you say, hey, I see this. I have to guard against it. I have to protect these people against that. You are watchful. You are vigilant. So you are sober-minded and you are watchful. And this is sort of iconic in our culture. How many movies have you seen where someone was on guard duty and they were not vigilant and people suffered as a result? I mean, it's sort of like almost any major movie you see, somebody's supposed to be on guard duty. Some thriller, some action movie or whatever, and they blow it and people die or suffer as a result. It's the same kind of thing. So, gregoro, in dangerous situations, senses are heightened automatically. In particular, we see, hear, and even smell things more acutely. Our physical responses speed up. Our perception oftentimes even slows things down. There is this sense where we have this enemy prowling around, and our senses should be heightened. Our spiritual senses especially should be heightened. We should always know when he is manifesting himself in a way that is more poignant than other times, or when it seems to be focused. And it is true about those senses thing. When you are in real danger, your body changes. You see things you didn't see before. You hear things you couldn't hear before. You even smell things. When I hunt black bear, I can promise you that my senses are heightened more when I feel like I'm close to one. They smell. They smell like pee, sweat, and pot. That's what they smell like. And when you're downwind from them, you're pretty close, and your senses are heightened. You can smell them. You know that you are close. When you hear them cough, they have a coughing sound they do, you know you are close. And if you don't have respect for a black bear and he turns the tables on you, you lose. So you have to be vigilant. You have to watch. You have to be on your guard. But unlike my hunting, there's a beginning, middle, and end to when I hunt black bear. There's a beginning, middle, and never-ending hunting. When the enemy hunts for us, he takes no time off. We are always in his sights as his prey. We can choose to believe that and ignore it, or we cannot. Other biblical translations for watchful are alert, vigilant, stay awake, keep watch, be careful, watch carefully for danger, watch at all times. Other exegetes use these words for the word gregoro. The third word, be sober-minded, be watchful. Your adversary, the word Satan literally means adversary. The devil prowls around like a roaring lion seeking someone to devour. Your adversary. The Greek word adversary is the word antidikos. It is a legal term for an opponent in a lawsuit or a prosecuting attorney. The term applies that the devil acts as an accuser, bringing charges against believers in a spiritual courtroom by highlighting their past sins to cause them to feel unworthy and thus to be devoured. This text also underscores Satan as one of the primary roles that he has as an accuser. So apparently, there's this kind of idea that when you and I die and we stand before God to give an account for ourselves, one of the roles that Satan will play is to accuse you of all of the sins that you have done. And apart from Christ, we only need to commit one sin to disqualify us from eternity. Now, how many sins have any one of us committed just this morning? Times that, times however many years you've lived. And those sins you will be accused of. And independently from Christ, you have no defense. So basically saying, well, God, you think I rebelled against you. Have you seen what they've done? And God would say, well, you know, you kind of helped them. Right? Well, that's beside the point. They still did what they did. They deserve punishment and death. And apart from Christ, there is no hope. John records this in John 12:10. Then I heard a loud voice in heaven say, now have come the salvation and power and the kingdom of our God and the authority of his Messiah. For the accuser of our brothers and sisters who accuses them before God day and night. He is the accuser. Satan is our accuser. There is nothing good that he intends for anyone here in this room. Nothing. In every sin that we have in our life, he will try to leverage in a way to bring about our destruction. So the next word is devil, your adversary, the devil, diabolos. Diabolos means, so the word devil, which is diabolos, literally means slanderer. He will not only present a case against us for our destruction, he will even slander us. So it's not that we haven't hurt ourselves enough. He will take what we've done and he will make it worse. He will slander you. Have any of you ever been slandered before? People have said things about you that were unjust or incorrect or misrepresented. They lied about your nature, your character, who you were as a person. And other people were talking about it and how hurtful that is, how destructive that can be. Satan is a slanderer. He will lie about us. And not only before God, but he will lie to others about us. I mean, that's gossip. Gossip is slander. You've seen gossip at work. You've seen gossip in the church. And it is a hideous thing. And when you gossip and you slander, you and I, when we do that, we imitate Satan as a slanderer. It's designed to wound, to hurt, to discourage. Which is why Jesus said every word that we have ever said, sort of off the cuff, that we should not have said, will be announced from the rooftops. We will be accountable for every word. Slander is imitating Satan. The next word is prowls. And I don't have my phonetic spelling for this word here, so I can't pronounce it, but you can see what it is right there. So the adversary, the devil, the slanderer, the adversary, the person who's going to try and argue against us, the devil, the person who's slandering us, he prowls around. So be sober-minded and be watchful. If you can go on to the next slide there, he prowls around like a roaring lion seeking someone to devour. This word prowl conveys the meaning of moving around restlessly or stealthily with the intent to attack and to devour, similar to a lion hunting for prey. The verse warns that the devil is constantly seeking opportunities to trap and to destroy believers, requiring them to be spiritually watchful and sober-minded. So he's prowling around in our lives. And again, the common grace of God protects us from that largely in this world, but not entirely. The enemy is prowling around in the darkness. Do you ever see a lion in the dark? You know, a lion has 8 times the visual acuity in the dark that a human does. They can see you, you cannot see them. During the daytime, most lions are savanna type of creatures, so they're in the grass, and they blend in beautifully. You can't see them in the grass, and I'll show you that in a minute. It's very difficult, but they're prowling in the darkness. They're prowling among camouflage that hides them. The enemy prowls in the dark portions of our life. He prowls around and camouflages himself in those areas of our life that we cannot see him. When you prowl, you are secretive, you are being tactical, you are being crafty. There are elements of ambushing and surprising and waiting for an opportune moment and looking for disadvantages for the prey they are hunting. They are positioned in a way through their prowling to wait until there's an opportune moment to get. The next word in here is roaring. Your adversary, the devil, prowls around like a roaring lion. He is arrogant. He is prideful. He's announcing that he's there. You just don't know where he is. He can roar during... A lion's roar can go 3 miles in distance, and you have no idea where it came from. And if it's in the dark, you certainly have no idea where it came from. But this idea of roaring, if you can go on to the next slide. Be sober-minded, be watchful. Your adversary, the devil, prowls around like a roaring lion. This is an interesting word, this roaring word. Arumentos means to roar or to howl. It is an onomatopoeia. If this is a great word here, an onomatopoeic word. And what that word means, onomatopoeic word, what it means is this. The word is pronounced like it sounds. So when Peter was writing this and he used the word roaring, if you were reading it out loud, you would read the roaring like a lion roaring. That's how you would say it. Roaring is how you would say that word. You think Peter was trying to be subtle when he used the word roaring? Did you think that in using that word, he wasn't trying to convey a certain kind of meaning about how dangerous this was? How significant his presence was? This roaring thing? The next word is lion. Leon is the word. Leon. So if anybody's named Leon, that's lion. That's what it means. And in this particular text, it's masculine. A male lion is what it's referring to. It is interesting that Peter uses the lion as a metaphor signifying power, leadership, and royal authority. Normally, it's also used to describe Christ. But here, Peter is focusing on the lion as experienced in rural villages and towns. And I'll say more about that later. You might think, well, you know, how prevalent was a lion then? How would they really know about lions? Well, here's an interesting study. So if you'll go on to the next slide. All of the red that you see there was the domain or territory of lions during the biblical times. all the way into Europe, France. It doesn't show that there, but they think that there were Spain, Portugal. Seems to be some indication. The blue that you see there is where lions are now. Lions right now, I think, are the second or third largest man killer in Africa, and they're only in those blue areas. How many people do you think lions were killing back then in rural villages and towns that had no protection against them? So I think people were acutely aware of the danger of lions. And that if you had a man-eater, I mean, you can see here that there were 250 lion deaths in 2023, I think is what it says there. The man-eaters of the Njombe in Tanzania reportedly killed up to 1,500 people between 1932 and 1947. Lions were a real present threat and danger to people back then. So they had almost mythical status in terms of what they could do. There is no animal on earth, there is no land animal on earth that if a pride of lions decides to tackle them, that they cannot take it down. Not an animal. If you lived in a rural area and you had a man-eater or man-eaters around your village, you were pretty helpless unless the government sent some soldiers or professional hunters. There was nothing really you could do. So the point behind the metaphor is, with lion, is that the Apostle Peter is using this ubiquitous, highly regarded, and legendary lion as a metaphor to convey Satan as an ever-present, very powerful, concealed, obvious, terrifying, and ominous enemy against which the individual has very little earthly protection or defense. You and I have very little earthly protection or defense against Satan other than Christ. I could say more about lions, but I'm running out of time. But just using that metaphor alone was really fascinating. You have no chance against a lion if you are in denial of its existence as it hunts for you. If you're in the savannah and you say, there aren't any lions out here, I don't have to worry about them, you have no chance. If you say, Satan's not a big deal, I don't have to worry about him, you have zero chance. Zero chance. So now we come to the word seeking, and I moved several slides ahead, Mike, just so you know. Be sober-minded, be watchful. Your adversary, the devil, prowls around like a roaring lion, seeking someone. So this word seeking, exateo, implies a diligent, earnest, and active search. Peter's using this word. He's saying, look, this lion is diligent. This lion is earnest. He is in an active search. He is relentless to hunt and to devour. The context of the verse describes the devil prowling like a lion, actively searching for opportunities to attack and to harm believers and non-believers. The final word is devour. Like a roaring lion seeking someone to devour. The Greek word for devour, this is another Greek word, I'm not exactly sure, I don't have my phonetic spelling here, but it is, which literally means to swallow down or gulp down. The enemy wants to swallow us, to gulp down, and implies a consuming or destroying action, much like a lion would to consume its prey. The devil's intention is to destroy the believer's faith, peace, and spiritual well-being, not necessarily to cause physical death, just although it can be the consequence of its attacks. So it means to be subdued, torn apart, not always dead before eaten, consumed to perpetuate its life. There's a certain kind of relish and desire associated with it to satisfy the pains of gnawing hunger. Be sober-minded, be watchful, Your adversary, the devil, prowls around like a roaring lion, seeking someone to devour. This is our enemy. Can you go on to that slide? This is our enemy. My enemy, your enemy. Ignore, deny, or don't believe at your own peril. He exists. He is like that lion that Peter describes in a very graphic, ominous, and terrifying fashion. And he wants us. So how does a person avoid being devoured? By believing in Jesus Christ. By surrendering and submitting ourselves to him. Believe and trust that his shed blood and death saves you from Satan and his intent for your eternal destruction. Lovingly surrender, submit, and serve Christ in all of your life. Jesus Christ came 2,000 years ago on the cross to save us from being devoured by our ancient enemy, who hates us with a special hatred, who will relish and be joyful at our destruction and his power over us. So where are you? Have you ever made that commitment to Christ? Do you believe? Do you believe that Jesus wants to save us from that? I mean, if what Peter is saying is true here, it's terrifying. Believe, ignore, at your own peril. But almost, I'm guessing most people in this room here would say to you that they believe that at some point in time they had an encounter, they brushed up against our ancient enemy, Satan, the accuser, the devil, the slanderer, the murderer from the beginning. And they'll tell you that it was just a terrifying thing. Whether it was in a dream, whether it was in an experience, whether it was people that they knew. So, as we get into Ephesians 6 and about what it is that we need in order to protect ourselves from the enemy, I will say from the very beginning, I'm hopeful that you will consider it if you have not. And even if you have, I'm hopeful that we will fine-tune our lives to be even more resilient against the attacks of the enemy. Just because you're a Christian doesn't mean he's done with you. He's not. Doesn't mean he doesn't have any kind of influence. He does. I mean, the Bible describes him as the prince of this world. And for this short period of time in our lives that he is here in this world, he exerts a certain amount of influence that can lead to our destruction, that can compromise us. We sang that hymn earlier. Carol just mentioned to you the hymn that we sang, and though this world with devils filled, threaten to subdue us. I'm wondering if we could close in that song. It's just one of the great, great hymns. One of the great hymns. And maybe now that we've taken a deep dive into 1 Peter 5:8, maybe you'll sing that song a little differently. I do want to offer this. I just want to say, if you want to know what it means to have a commitment with Christ, if you're not sure that you've had that commitment to Christ, then talk to me. I'm glad to talk to you about it. And don't put it off. Even right now, I can promise you this. There'll be some people here thinking like, well, what he's saying just sounds a little too intense. You're being deceived. Right now, you're being deceived. You may think, well, I'm not used to this kind of like language. It's kind of odd to me. I have to think about it. You're being deceived. Right now, you're being deceived. Don't put it off. Save yourself from this entity that seeks to devour everyone in this room. Praise be to God that He has provided a way for that to happen. Not happen.